Mics are live.
All right. Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is an informal hearing on case number PU-19-355. It is 1:33 p.m. Wednesday, January 8th, 2020. I'm Commissioner Brian Crosius, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchuk and Commissioner Randy Christman. The only opening comment I have is welcome. Look forward to the presentation. Commissioner Christman?
No opening comments.
And me either.
Commissioner Fedorchuk? Okay, we will, before we go around the room for introductions, this is an informal hearing involving only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts, we will close the informal hearing and issue a notice of hearing. The applicant does go first in this type of proceeding, but before starting, I'd like, again, our staff to introduce themselves, or Commissioner Christman?
Mr. Chair, may I change my mind and would make an opening comment?
Absolutely.
It just might seem odd. From what I expect to hear from MDU is, and I might be wrong, but I expect to hear that they would like to continue doing things in a similar method to how we've done these in the past. And so then why are we here? And so I think a lot of that has to do with my request in the past and feeling that when we spread the costs of wind farms out over 20 or 25 years and expect consumers in 20 years from now to be paying for the decisions that we make now, but then only use the PTCs up during the first 10 years, that it was just wrong and that we needed to look for a different way of doing that would be, in my mind, more fair to the people 11 years out and longer. And so I think that's kind of a overall little explanation of what we need to discuss, whether we want to make a change. And so
reviewing a levelized analysis.
It came from here, I think.
Okay. Jack, do you want to introduce yourself, Victor, and we'll go around to the company.
Sure. John Hsu with the Public Service Commission.
Victor Shook with staff.
Kurt Singer with Montana Dakota.
Carl Liepitz with MD Resources.
Travis Jacobson with Montana Dakota.
Tammy Eberle with Montana Dakota.
Okay, thank you. And if anyone else should happen during the course of the informal hearing today, come up to speak, just please identify yourself as well for the record. So with that, I will turn it over to the company.
Thank you, Commissioners. Thank you for this opportunity to get together, as you've outlined. So Montana Dakota did file its annual update to the Renewable Resource Cost Adjustment on November 1st of 2019. The filing requests $17,555,000 to be collected, which reflects a projected 2020 revenue requirement and a true-up of actual costs and revenues through September of 2019. The renewable rider continues to include the revenue requirements for the Diamond Willow, Cedar Hills, and Thunder Spirit wind projects. We are seeking to implement the adjusted rates as of February 1st of 2020, and as supported by the application, the proposed rates do comply with the tariff and would result in just and reasonable rates. Travis certainly intends to speak to the kind of the alternatives of levelizing that PTC or not, and so with that, I'll just turn it over to Travis to carry it forward.
Okay, thanks, Carl. As Carl mentioned, we're about $17.6 million in recovery. So our revenue requirement did go down a little bit from our most recent filing. However, the under-recovered balance increased for a variety of reasons. The application states that a residential customer using 894 kWh per month would see an annual increase of about $9. On their total bill, it's just under 1%, 0.78% of an increase. And just to maybe add a little more flavor to the under-collected balance, in our last filing, we had requested rates, so we only did projections through February, and we didn't implement rates until April. Our sales were a little bit less than what our filing had, and then also some of the contracts that were not incurring the charge before were not approved as we had shown in our filing. Those got approved later. So that added to the balance.
I'm not quite following what you mean by the last piece that you said, the contracts that were not approved.
So we had a number of contracts that in the past did not have to pay the renewable rider charge.
Okay.
Special contracts.
Customers?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
Those special contract cases we had. They went on longer than I think the company originally anticipated. So since they weren't paying the renewable rider for a good portion of 2019, and the expectation was they would be paying the majority, if not all, of 2019, there were less kilowatt hours.
So why did they go on longer? Are we going to get into that? Why did they not pay for 2019?
Their existing contracts before we approved the new ones did not require them to pay the renewable rider.
Okay.
And those were old contracts from like 07 and before.
But you had figured that they would originally?
So we filed in November of 18 thinking that, you know, all of this was going to line up, and unfortunately it just didn't quite make it.
Okay. What did you apply for in November of 18? For last year's.
The last year's rider, correct.
Okay.
Yep.
And so you, in that calculation, assumed that they would be paying through 2019, and they didn't really until
That's
the end.
Correct.
And that created most of this $2 million under recovery?
It's really a combination of several things. One is, you know, we had anticipated the last year's rider to go in February of 19, and that got pushed to April.
Okay.
So there were several months where we undercollected. Our volumes were a little bit higher than what we actually experienced, largely a little cooler summer than normal. Okay. And then finally then the contracts. So it's really a combination of the
yes.
three.
Thank you for repeating those for me.
Travis, the three things, are they pretty close to equal in their impact, or are one or two of them the primary causes, or how do they compare?
The primary cause would be the delay in the rates. And the reason for that is
that delay.
Right, because Thunder Spirit expansion wasn't in the prior rate. So that revenue requirement increased, but the prior rates weren't keeping up with that. So the primary reason is the delay in the rate for several months.
Thunder Spirit wasn't in the 2018 rate.
Correct.
And that rate carried through till April.
Correct.
All right.
So, and as Randy had mentioned, and Carl as well, as a part of this filing, we had included a comparison table of the rates in our attempt, and I know there's a number of different ways to do this, but in a way that what we tried to do was we tried to match the PTCs with the revenue requirement or the revenue required for all of the wind assets. What we did to develop a model is we picked a 20-year time frame, and that really lines up to end with the Thunder Spirit project. That is the largest one, but it would extend beyond what is probably a typical life for either Thunder Spirit or Cedar Hills. Not extensively, but a little bit. So we tried to get those rates to match up a little bit better and to alleviate that increase in the revenue requirement associated with those assets in year 11 when those PTCs roll off. In any model where we're doing a 20-year projection, obviously the last several years get to be a little dicey. We tried to, you know, capture what we would anticipate is real increases in O&M. We have a number of contracts, for instance, on Thunder Spirit for the maintenance of those. So those are fairly well known. We know what our plant balance is. We know what the depreciation We have pretty good ideas of all those. But again, we went out 20 years for all the plants. We did not include any major capital in trying to come up with a levelized, but we did include capital on our Thunder Spirit and Cedar Hills projects. Those, we've been experiencing some gearbox replacements, so we tried to capture those costs, but no major projects like the lighting detection or repowering. That's one of the projects that we're investigating, whether that's an economic project or not.
But you'll have to do the light mitigation. So correct. You didn't include that, though?
We did not include that. Mm-hmm. We really don't have a good basis for an estimate of the costs on those yet.
Mm. Better get after it. That deadline is not that far away. No, for the old ones. You have till 2021. Mm-hmm. So you've got this year and next year. But yep. Still, we've had companies wait, and it causes
trouble. I mean, we're looking at it, but we didn't have a
okay.
estimate for
that,
this.
That's an aside anyways.
So one of the items that, because of where we're at in the process and the lives of our PTCs, Diamond, Willow, and Cedar Hills, those fully expire in 2020. So there really isn't a lot to spread then to those future years. Obviously, Thunder Spirit is the largest part of that, but we're already in our fifth year of that project as well. And then on the expansion piece, we're into our third year. So we're a little bit into the time frame of levelizing those and having it maybe be more impactful. I guess a couple of the last two bullets I'd say are maybe more outcomes than assumptions, but what it would do is it's going to require us to collect more in the early years and to offset that, which is by design, but that's how we would do that. And then it does create some complexities in our accounting for that additional revenue, as well as the complexity of rolling forward with a levelized over a long period of time. So moving on to the next slide, slide number 5. So how we calculated the levelized, we projected an annual revenue requirement in the same fashion that we did our year one, which is how we've been filing. We took the PTCs, essentially you have to recognize those when they're earned. So from a tax filing perspective, we don't have the option of levelizing or spreading those PTCs over a period of time. They have to be recognized at the time they're earned. So even though we're showing a levelized revenue, we're doing it through a regulatory asset rather than actually spreading that value of those PTCs over that time. So what that does then is the company will pay a reduced income tax for its federal income tax expense, but it's going to charge the customers as if it were paying more in tax. So again, we took the average annual that's required to meet the revenue requirement of those assets, and then that difference essentially would then be set up as a deferred revenue, deferred asset, or deferred liability, I should say, with an associated deferred income tax, and then that ends up on your rate base statement. So it does, over time, result in lower revenue that the customer would pay over that time frame. And if you look at it on a net present value basis, it's about a 2% difference. So it's not a significant difference in terms of what the customer is going to pay. But by putting the regulatory asset onto your rate base, it becomes iterative then. Every time I change what that amount is, it changes my return, which changes the deferred asset. So it's not a very straightforward calculation in how that's computed. So the next slide, I put together a table which shows the if we were to just use annual filings, the first column there for each year would show the revenue requirement. And, you know, as Randy has pointed out, if you look at 2026, that's the cliff that Randy doesn't like, if I understand that right. So we see that where the revenue requirement, the PTCs roll off, and we see an increase in our rates that we need to charge customers. Moving over to the next column, the attempt there was to match, again, the revenue on those wind facilities with the PTCs. And certainly we see that much more consistent revenue pattern. And we don't see that big spike in 2026. The third column there, the dollars of change, that is just really the difference in the two methods. If we were to use a levelized in year one, we'd charge about $2 million more. That's the revenue that we collect that would end up as a regulatory liability that at some future year would be provided back to the customer to balance that out. You can see the percentage changes there. It goes on both sides, either plus or minus, and it gets up to about 50% in years 24 and 25, where the revenue requirement on the levelized becomes substantially more. And again, that's at that point where the your wind facilities are fully depreciated for tax basis, and you have the 100% of the PTCs in there for those periods. So it really drives down that revenue requirement on an annual basis. And then finally, the last column is the average annual usage for an average residential customer using 894 kWh a month. Not certainly as significant in terms of the customer impact until you get out to, you know, year three, four, five, and then you see those turn around again at the same time that annual revenue requirement changes. So I don't know if anybody has more questions, if we need to dig into that a little deeper. That's really all I had on the levelized. And I guess to kind of summarize my presentation.
I do have one more question about this. Okay. This chart here on the average annual residential column.
Yep.
The years 26 through 29 with the negative numbers, does that mean that their rates go down that much?
So what that would mean is if we use this levelized, they would actually pay less than if we don't use a levelized.
Right. They pay so less in those years, but these are specific numbers, so are you saying that that's how much you estimate they'd drop?
Like, just between the two methods, if I'm a customer and I'm paying $1,000 a year, on the old method, I would only pay $975 on the new method.
Okay. So this is the difference in between the two methods.
Correct.
In terms of the customer impact.
Correct.
The bill on that year.
Yes.
The 2020, they'd pay $10.44 more than they would with the levelized method, but, and all likewise. And then, okay.
Yep. That's correct.
I'm sorry. I have to go grab something from my desk.
Okay. The rates would be sort of flat then? Like they would change less?
Correct. So really, I think if you look at the third column, levelized method, That sort of lays out what our annual revenue that we would collect, again, from all customers. So you do see that.
It's pretty much the same.
Very consistent.
And that was really the goal of that, this levelized method, was to levelize it. There's other methods that we had talked about. So the last time we talked about this...
wasn't there some fancy Victor method?
This actually is the Victor method.
Oh, it is?
The other method levelizes the PTC value over time, and it doesn't jump around as much as the normal method, but it doesn't levelize as nicely as the Victor method. Because that was the mindset I took when I came up with my method, was to levelize the cost, make it look the same over time. The other method, it makes it look like any other utility asset. So if you take a gas plant, a power line, it starts out very high cost for the annual revenue requirement at the beginning, and it goes down over time. That's what the alternative method of just using PTCs equally over the life of the project, that's how it would look. So it would start out probably even much higher. I don't know what the numbers would be, but let's say probably another 10%.
I would agree.
In the early years. So
10% what?
10% more than the levelized method here.
You'd use 10% more at the beginning.
The revenue, the cost to a customer would be about 10% more.
Okay.
In the early years.
And this is with what method?
This is with the levelizing PTC value over time.
Simply, how is that different from what this is, Victor?
Because this is it's a weird calculation thing that we came up with, but it's essentially using PTCs to nearly eliminate the return component of the revenue requirement. And what that does is just levelize cost over time. There's two different ways we're using the word levelize. You can levelize the PTC value, or you can levelize the cost to the customer on an annual basis.
The increase in the revenue requirement.
Right.
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 And this was important in you trying to help me explain, me understand. So let's see how well I learned.
Yeah.
We're kind of, the basis of this was, and I don't remember the exact numbers or percentages you used, but roughly in various cases, these PTCs are amounting to about 70% of the revenue requirement. And so,
of the return component.
Of the return component. And so in like the first year, of the 10 years of PTCs, you were figuring, okay, if the PTCs are X, we'll use 70% of them to offset that return requirement, save the other 30% for later, and then doing that each year, and that's what built something up for the later years.
Correct.
So there's a formula to it.
Yes, there is a formula.
And I wanted to, because I missed, I think, the exact same question. What you're comparing here is the Victor method, not the pure just levelizing it that I had originally suggested, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
One of the reasons why it may not be as impactful as you might think is because, like, for Thunder Spirit, it's already halfway through the PTC collection, right? So had you started in year one, it might be different, but being that we're in year five then of collecting those, there's just not as much to levelize over the remainder as well.
It's true.
The other thing, if whoever's running the control, going back to the chart, I think it's important to realize, though, this doesn't end in 2029. The more favorable impact on ratepayers goes out quite a few more years than that. And so, you're showing the years where the current method is probably beneficial quite a bit up front, but there's benefits to ratepayers from the levelized method go way longer than this chart.
That's correct. The major years, though, are 26 through 28.
Yeah.
Where it...
But then it continues.
It continues all the way really to the end. Yeah.
Okay. Victor, I think you need to get a little Victor with an R on this.
Probably.
It's your only chance, Victor.
Yeah, I don't think it's... I don't know. It kind of depends on how widely it gets adopted.
Got to get a trademark.
That's always the question, yeah. If I don't trademark it now, it's going to be too late. Cats out of the bag. All the money's lost.
I think we image it and call it the Shook Look.
The Shook Look?
Yeah.
It does. It really does.
I like it. What are the downsides to this? Aside from, you know, the people who only have to pay for the first few years gain a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so the downfalls of this levelized method, you know, are a couple of things. First of all, it's probably best to leave the assets in the rider for their entire lives versus sweeping them into base rates like we traditionally do have done in the past. Because once they go into base rates, it's incredibly difficult to ensure that they're being calculated separately and accurately.
What would you do with the PTCs? And if you...
I mean, you could still calculate them the same way. It's just that they're lost in a much bigger stew of other things.
And I don't see that that's a big problem.
It's not impossible.
It's not moving them out of the...
We kind of do with transmission.
What do you mean?
So I think you're saying that it's not a big problem to keep it in the rider. So we keep a transmission rider around eternally for MISO and SPP costs. So there's no reason we can't. Mm-hmm. I think how I'd respond.
But why don't we typically keep those on the riders? Simplify the bill, or
yeah, I think so. And I mean, you know, that's what they were. They weren't created. I don't think initially to be eternal. They were created as a stepping stone to slow down rate cases.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean that's the only way you can use them, but that's, I think, what they were created for. I guess, there's that. That would be a downfall. It really depends on what your objective is with this. The current method, the levelizing PTC value and levelizing PTC cost, they all have benefits depending on what your objective is.
So, Victor, one question I guess I have is, clearly this is not the treatment that's being used for any other generation resource.
Correct.
Right. And how do you reconcile the fact that this is being treated, getting the special accounting treatment, while the rest of the resources are not?
I think we give special accounting treatment to other things. So, I'm not necessarily advocating for any particular treatment. I'm kind of neutral on this one. I just wanted to point out the positives and negatives of these to the commissioner so they can make an appropriate decision.
Right, and I guess I'm not trying to imply that you didn't support this. I know you were just putting this, but I mean, there are these general rate making principles that we tend to follow, the magic principles and all these different things. And this would be a unique way of approaching the rate making and levelizing these. I mean, so I guess to me it seems like, for example, if another resource came in, a gas plant or a coal generation facility with some sort of investment tax credit, would that be something we'd be looking at doing for those as well? And I mean, a generation rider or something like that? Or is this something that we're just going to keep solely for wind generation resources?
I think it's good to look outside of the box in our regulatory treatment. Okay. If we can benefit customers over the long run. If there's some sort of investment tax credit on something, I would consider it.
Sure.
And customer, that's around for the duration, though, of a facility's life expectancy of 20 years or whatever, beyond that. This, I realize that it obviously the word levelized, it levels the cost out, but for those that jump in later or become a customer later, it creates, the argument is it creates a degree of parity for them in terms of the rates they pay. In other words, they're not seeing the benefit of the PTC if they're not a current customer.
Right.
And then they would have to.
They would be paying more.
Paying more later, yeah.
And I'd like to just jump in on that point, because, and it kind of goes to your point, too, on your question of why would we treat this different than some other generation assets. And I don't know. I'd have to think through and go to some schooling to figure out how it would compare with, like, an investment tax credit. I just don't know, so I'm not going to go there. But this is different than some other things because, A, the significant portion of these that are paid for by PTCs and the fact that it's over a short time compared to the life of the facility. And to me, that is the distinguishing thing here, and whether something else like a solar farm with an investment tax credit, I just don't know if that is the same. But I'm looking at another chart here, and this is what I think is so important. It gets to your point, Mr. Chairman, about what happens to the people who come in at the end and didn't get to benefit these first years. And I don't know where this chart came from, if it's a Victor thing or if something you guys handed out earlier or what, but it's the average residential customer monthly charge on these facilities. And in 2040, in the current model, in 2040, the customer charge is going to be more than in 2020. And we can't even say for certain that these are going to be used in 2040 anymore. I mean, something may have come along that's completely replaced this. We might have 10 megawatt turbines out there, and these just, you can't even afford to use them with new subsidies. There's, who knows? This is unique in that it's upside down, in the fact that so much of it is being paid for elsewhere in those first 10 years, in my opinion.
I think that is also one of the challenges for me in terms of, you know, looking at this almost from a status quo standpoint, that there aren't going to be dramatic changes over the next several decades, which I wouldn't bet on things just remaining the way they are today, because the world's going to be completely different in terms of generation as we move forward, or continue to change and evolve. So is this good long-term? Do we set a precedence that, to your point, how do we treat other generation assets at that point in time? And you know, obviously we can make adjustments as we go. Can you reiterate the concerns you have? Or at least
Sure.
I believe that's what you were alluding to. Can you say, just from a company standpoint, here's what worries us and how it can negatively impact consumers?
And I guess I'm not so sure that our concern is really negatively impacting the consumer necessarily.
Okay.
Certainly they're going to pay substantially more early on. I think in any of those methods that we looked at, you know, the early years, there's a benefit of those production tax credits. We have to recognize them. I mean, that's just how it works. But the customer is going to pay more. In our exercise here, we expect that balance that we would collect could be in the neighborhood of $25 to $30 million. So that's more cash to the company. Not necessarily a real negative from that perspective, from a company's perspective. I guess one of the main concerns I think that we have is, so it's jumping off the building. Once you do it, are you tied in then for that 20 years? And so maybe it's the method going forward is the next year then we just do over 19. So we do a levelized over 19. We know we're going to have to true it up every year, which we do currently anyway, so it's not, that's not the concern, but it's what's our next steps going forward. And then, you know, you mentioned what's going to happen between now and 2040. We don't really know. Is there going to be some other tax laws that'll change the you know, the impact of this. We really don't know those answers. You know, the PTCs now, if I remember right, are expiring or nearly expiring. So it's really going to be tied to these projects. The next wind project, if we were to do one in a few years, it may not have production tax credits, but would we put that in the same rider and you know, to continue that? You know, on the generation rider, we have that, but it's a 40-year asset, and that revenue requirement is extraordinarily stable. So without these tax credits, investment tax credits are treated entirely different. They're really a balance rate base item. So they have a different treatment. They just don't have the same impact that the production tax credits have. And maybe in solar, would something come along that there is a production tax credit on those? I 20 years is a long time to project what you may or may not experience. Right. And I think that's our major concern.
I mean, conceptually, I really like the element of fairness in this approach. I really do. And I think it's a strong argument in terms of why we should consider something like this. I believe investment tax credits, though, would be, they're just a different animal. I believe that they don't have to be used immediately. I believe they can carry forward, and they can also almost, in some ways, I view them as a financial instrument. They can be sold. But I just know enough to be slightly dangerous in that arena. One thought, and I'm just thinking out loud, if an early retirement of an existing generating facility occurs, then in terms of the element of fairness, who benefited from the generation from that facility? And at the very least, it would be the current class of ratepayers. So then do they pick up an undepreciated balance that ultimately has to be accounted for in some way versus future classes of ratepayers who'd never benefited from that facility being in operation? And these are just questions that I go back and forth on, and I think this is a really good thing to look at, but we just have to thoroughly vet it as well.
Sure.
I didn't quite follow your last point about the two groups of ratepayers and how they would potentially be negatively impacted by this. Can you restate that, Brian? The future, the current versus the future, like the way if something changes, so the worst case scenario, in my opinion, would be that later ratepayers would benefit from something that they didn't have to pay for, right?
You're talking
because
about
that asset would be there and they'd be taking advantage of it.
You're talking about an early retirement, the example I used at the end?
Yeah.
There are facilities that are out there that could certainly face early retirement for a variety of reasons. You know, we're hearing about it.
Right.
So if a facility is retired, for example, 5 or 10 years ahead of the anticipated retirement date, there's an undepreciated balance that has not been spread over the next 5 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. So now you have a lump sum, or however it's handled. Who picks up the cost of that early retirement? Is it the current class of ratepayers, or would it be ratepayers that may not even be in the picture yet, or weren't around the entire time that facility was in operation?
You're talking about a completely different scenario, not
well,
this with these
but
PTCs.
To me it all ties in, though, because we're trying to create an element of fairness in terms of who benefits, and future classes of ratepayers, the future class of ratepayer classes that we're considering that are driving really consideration of this approach.
Yeah, I guess there's some similarities.
Do we fix one thing here, for example, without then having to start looking at how we fix other potential imbalances that will invariably occur in the future? We just don't know what they are yet.
I guess I see it a little differently as it relates to, you know, the early retirement and underappreciated assets, because here we know that the PTC exists for these resources and it helps reduce their costs. And so the question is, do you take that reduction, the cost reduction, and spread it out over the whole time, or all at once on the, you know, on the front end, front loaded?
Sure.
So I think it's different than the early retirement example, but
I think the principle, the principle of why we would be doing this doesn't change, in my mind.
It's kind of like a sale price that's been, you know, the price is different though.
It seems like they're both issues of generational fairness, but I don't know that one solution, the right answer to one has to do with the right answer to the other necessarily. I'm not quite making the connection on how we would meld the two together with solutions, but you had a great point about that is something I don't know exactly how we should be handling early retirements either.
And that's just an example. There are probably more unknowns that will surface than knowns at this point in time. But just
so
exploring,
Jack,
every angle.
You seem to have some concerns with this approach.
Commissioner, I guess I wouldn't say that I necessarily have concerns. I think I was just trying to fully flesh this out, as particularly since this isn't normal rate making. This is abnormal. And it doesn't mean that we can't depart from that. I guess that's one question I would have for the company is, clearly we can calculate this out and, with the levelized revenue requirement. Do you see any legal issues with actually applying the levelized revenue requirement in this manner?
None that I'm aware of, I guess, but I mean, we haven't certainly talked about that either.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it might not be traditional rate making, but why? Why? I mean, does it go against any traditional rate-making principle? Is it just that the...
Yes.
So,
yep.
Which is what?
Expensive? Usually you match the revenues of the costs in normal accounting. That being said, you can levelize these revenues, and accounting-wise, you can change the accounting, and I feel that it's well within the Commission's authority to do so. I wasn't trying to really express that I have any concerns if that's the path that the Commission wants to go down from my standpoint. I guess I was trying to make sure that we
flesh out. I appreciate that. Yeah. No, that's, we have to do that. And I kind of feel like you guys all know what the concerns are and you assume we know them, but we're not accountants. So you have to be clear about what are they? What are the concerns? I don't do accounting speak. So
sure.
They aren't jumping out at the page for me.
I think it's just the complexity is the primary one. It makes it messy. You know, I mean, utility rate making isn't a clean process to begin with, and you're adding a few extra levels of complexity.
Yeah.
So if I were to have one major concern, that would probably be it, is the level of complexity that it adds. With that being said, I mean, it's kind of interesting to try different things along these lines. I mean, depending on how you want to make this thing look. I mean, the two different methods, so the levelizing PTC value, that makes a wind farm look more like every other utility asset. You know, when starting out high and going to lower, versus the wind farm that starts a little bit high, goes down, and then jumps back up, and then goes back down. The middle of the road levelizing PTC value takes that away, and mine makes it look like nothing else and just on a straight line.
You know, and from the company's perspective, if you look at the differences, because we're halfway through the biggest asset, Thunder Spirit, they aren't that impactful, right, when you look at the annual amounts. And the other thing is, from the company's perspective, what will change in energy 5 to 10 years down the road that would give those customers a benefit at that time, right? So that's the unknown from the company's perspective.
One thought I'd have to that, though, is, would customers be in a better position to be paying a lower cost for the existing resources at that time if something else lower cost comes along, or would they be better off paying a high cost for something? You know, I mean, that's kind of what I would counter to that. I mean, again, I'm not advocating for anyone, but I've certainly thought about that, and that was kind of when I try to think through all of those details. You know, if I'm only paying $7 a month for this energy that I already own, when something else comes along for 7.5, I don't feel so bad. But if I'm paying $9 in 10 years from now for that same energy that I own because I am using the standard PTC method, and $7.5 energy comes along, and all of a sudden I got these towers that have more expensive energy coming out of them than the market has. I don't know if that made any sense to someone who wasn't an accountant, but it'd be Travis only.
just for my own general knowledge too, I was wondering if someone could run me through. I understand that there's going to be the regulatory assets and liabilities that will be created by this, but I was wondering if someone would just generally discuss the return components on that and what the commission can expect to see with that, Victor or Travis.
The return component.
Regarding the regulatory assets and the liabilities.
So this would primarily create regulatory liability for the company, and it would reduce the return component. So in the early years where we're not utilizing the entirety of the PTCs the company is getting from its tax return, so you have your rate base sitting out there, let's say $200 million, and you have $10 million of extra PTCs you're not using. That goes to reduce the rate base that customers are paying a return on. So because of that, customers will pay less of a return to the company over that period of time as well. So they're paying this $25 million sooner, but at the same time, they're paying a return, not paying a return on that $25 million either. So to the tune of millions, customers would pay less of a return to MDU over the life of the projects, which is a big benefit.
A big benefit that I was waiting for you to get to and point out. That it's not just a matter of the increases costs at the beginning, but it decreases them at the end. But it doesn't net out to zero. The total amount of ratepayer impact over the whole term is significantly less if it's levelized.
Right, because in essence, the company would be keeping that cash instead of passing it back, and you'd reinvest it somewhere else.
So you'd be making a return on it that way. Right. Well, that seems pretty significant. How many millions? Can that be calculated? Do you have that?
At its peak, it'd be in that $25 to $30 million. In year 5 or 6, I think, is when it peaks, and then it starts to drop.
But over the life, it was about $2
million? 2% on net present value. Right off the top of my head, I don't remember the total. You know, if I look at 20 years worth of revenue, I don't remember the number specifically.
The first question I need to have you answer, Julie, is which number? So we have present value of revenue requirements, which takes in a time value of money, and then the other possibility would be simply a total of the annual revenue requirements.
That last one.
Okay. In that scenario, I don't know if, Travis, you know the total difference between those two. I know I have the spreadsheets in my office, but I did not bring them in with me. I would say 20?
I was going to say 10 to 15. Is where
let's say 15,
it's significant.
Right. So let's say over that 20 years, $10 to $15 million less customers would pay.
Total.
Not each year.
Yeah.
Total over that 20 years, customers would pay in dollars in those years that much less. Mm. When you calculate the present value revenue requirement is just taking this time value of money business, and then it equalizes it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Real. I mean, time value of money is a real thing. Yeah. It's not made up.
No.
Well, but an accountant made it up, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Therefore, nobody understands it. Right. So it doesn't seem real. Yeah. That is right,
Gary. That's the way it goes. And again, isolating this one example on this one.
Right.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
And we're talking about the customer's bill for this one asset.
Right.
Yeah, I just want
and would
not knowing where the customer's bill
would now outside of your issues here. So I guess it's more of a question for Victor. A newer wind farm for a different company, because my whole presumption is we either are doing this or we're not. I think would do the same thing with all the regulated utilities. It's either right or wrong in my mind. But the differences in this case are actually kind of minimized because these have been around for a while, as opposed to another project potentially with another utility that's in the first or second year of their PTCs or just being built right now, right?
Correct.
Its numbers are going to be significantly higher both ways.
Yep. And I, yes, I mean, this one makes it a little fuzzier, not quite as apparent the benefits of the different methods. But if you just simply took from day one of a brand new wind farm and calculated the differences, it would be much more apparent the benefits of the different methods.
And then I have a question on Travis's point because it's one I hadn't thought of. Because as we've seen just a few weeks ago, my old theory that PTCs are always expiring soon, but they never do. But if for some reason they ever did, and you said, so what do we do with a new wind farm asset that has no PTCs? So if we adopted this levelized model, it really wouldn't have any impact, would it, except for that it would stay as a rider instead of being in rate base? But what we're talking about here wouldn't really have any impact then with no PTCs to spread out.
Levelize.
There would be no levelizing, I would agree.
Or is there something I'm missing that would change?
I don't think so. If you just ignored the production tax credits as well, because the wind farm has a five-year tax life, whereas a power plant might have a 39-year tax life, you do see where your first-year revenue requirement to the second, through that first five-year period, it does drop off precipitously because of that tax treatment, which that's compounded with the PTCs. Again, I guess, is it, we put a new wind farm in 5 years from now, would that then become part of this 20-year calculation, or is that extending, or do you just say, nope, that can't be in this rider, you have to treat that one separately with no levelizing? I guess those are the unknowns that we're kind of trying to think through so that we can highlight any concerns we have.
Okay. Are there any other tax spiffs basically that you companies use to that have to reduce costs, like this is a tax credit so it's reducing costs, that are treated in a way other than when the benefit is received it's passed along to customers, like when you get the double
Well, we had the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act changes. I mean, there was a variety of treatments that we implemented for those. Mm-hmm. So the reduction of the corporate income tax rate changed a lot of tax values for utilities.
Mm-hmm.
And we had several different methods we used for that. I mean, some things we took in 1 year, called it done, and some things are going on for 10, 20 plus years.
Things that weren't protected or what the government said you have to use this method, and we have the flexibility then to amortize or whatever balances were left over the period, such like pension, I think, was one of the balances on the preferred taxes trials, right? There were a few other ones like that.
That's correct. And really, at the time, the non-protected and non-plant, as soon as that tax law was passed, you recognize that gain in not having to pass those or not having to have that deferred tax. And I think this really is to Randy's point, we took and levelized those over a variety in some of our jurisdictions. We went over 10 years. Even though that benefit was recognized on day one, mm-hmm. I think a very good example of what you just asked. Mm-hmm. Are there other tax issues that are recognized at one point but not realized to the customer's benefit mm-hmm. or detriment, whichever it happens to be, at the same time? That would be an example. I would say, generally speaking, the other, if it's bonus depreciation, right. those type of things, those on an income statement, they're just offsets between current and deferred taxes, so they don't have an income statement impact. But those are recognized on the balance sheet or the rate base statement at the time that you experience them. So those
would almost be, bonus depreciation would almost be treated more like the levelizing version. I mean, not quite as wonky, but...
But it just hits your rate base and moves on from there. So there isn't really a levelizing...
Right, but it goes to reduce your rate base.
It does. That's correct. Well, I would agree with
that. And therefore the return over time.
And it carries forward, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep, until it turns around.
Yep. So it's slightly different, but...
Conceptually similar.
Yeah.
So then it's... Yeah. I'm back to the rate-making principles. Because I think that it's easier to entertain these ideas if they fit within your principles.
Sure.
You know, somehow. So this isn't completely out of bounds.
Yes, I would agree. Usually those were as a result of federal government interaction with the process, though, as opposed to here. Well, I guess from that standpoint, it has production tax credit. Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, that's fair. That's a fair statement. Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of like it. I am troubled by the idea that down the road it could, you know, if it changes, which we probably will, we will have a complicated set of books. But
we'll also have a piggy bank of money sitting out there that if, you know.
A very large piggy
bank. Right.
Is it all right if I just ask the company a couple more questions as well? So I know you guys requested approval as originally filed. Are you agreeable to implementing it differently than it has filed, if the commission chooses to do so? I mean, do you see any major issues?
You know, from a legal perspective, there wouldn't be any issues. Sure. It would be, I mean, the commission has that authority, right, and flexibility to follow that and then for... purposes.
Right. Okay. I guess I want to come back to the equalization of the PTCs. Is that a less complex process than what we Victor's method? Maybe you could speak to that, Victor.
I mean, it's going to require similar kind of true-ups. You know, all of this is we're making assumptions about, you know, the costs on an annual basis, how much PTCs you're going to earn on an annual basis, what the PTCs are going to be worth after inflation in future years. So all of that requires a true-up, like the rider does already today. It's just a couple more true-ups within the true-up. So I don't see it as more complex. I don't know, Travis, if you would agree with that.
I agree. I don't think the complexity is different in any one of the methods if we were to try to levelize. Again, it's, I think one of our major concerns is just what's our path forward. Mm-hmm. So if we go down this path, it'd be nice to maybe have a clear picture of how we handle this. Is it going to be a set period of time, a rolling 20?
Sure.
I mean, those are the concerns. I think there's no legal requirement that we would be alarmed at. It's going to be establishing, because there's, you know, Victor and I have worked a little bit on what is that, what should the level be, and It's an iterative process, so he could run it, and I could run it. We could be off by maybe $1 million.
Administratively, what happens in 5 years down the road if there's a new major asset, right? Do you roll that into this? What period do you use? Or do you have to set up a new rate every time you have a new major asset? I mean, just from administrative purposes and calculations, I mean, there's complexity involved with that.
And there would be. I think the simple, my simple answer or my take would be we just simply calculate the revenue requirements separately and roll them into one total for the rider. Because I agree. Otherwise, I mean, if you're just throwing that into the big stew, it
10 years down the road, you could get, you know, for a company that's big, you know, bigger than or larger than MDU, you could have multiple. It'd just be administratively maybe a lot to handle, right? I guess it'd be a concern going down.
I guess one of the question I would have is conceptually, the equalization of the PTCs. When I was thinking about it, that seemed like the more common sense, straightforward from the standpoint that it essentially makes it like every other generational resource, as opposed to creating a whole new paradigm specifically for these resources. Do you think, Victor, I guess, is that...
That's accurate.
Sure. And so would you say that is probably... I know we're agreeable to doing it whatever way is preferable. I know probably for the ratepayers' perspective, the shook look is the preference. But do you think just from, I guess, a parity standpoint, that if you were trying to capture that equalize things out as a result of those PTCs, that the equalization of the PTCs method is more appropriate, or the shook look?
If you're trying to keep things at parity and make assets look similar, I think levelizing the PTC value over time is more appropriate.
Which is the shook look?
No, it is not.
PTC value over time. What does the shook look levelize?
Shook look levelize cost.
Okay, never mind. Okay.
I think you mentioned, though, that if you do the levelized PTCs, you're going to end up with a higher revenue requirement up front.
Correct. So you would. If you start out with the three different starting points, you know, let's say we have $7 a month for the existing method. The shook look is about 8.5, let's say, bucks a month, and the levelizing PTC value over time is probably $10 a month.
Mm-hmm. And then kind of borders on a little bit of a rate shock issue.
Absolutely. That would be the major downfall, in my opinion, of the levelized PTC value.
We are adding, and probably some others, it's going to be more noticeable than in this case. We're adding so much additional generation that if we completely levelize them, it's going to be pretty dramatic.
Right.
It was my idea in the first place, I think.
But,
I think you're kind of moderating it and I think has really improved it.
Garrett, you were just talking about the complexity and if you were to add resources down the road. Do you mean like two Thunder Spirit or
right.
two?
So you added another one, right? So then you'd have a big advantage, PTC advantage, 5 or 10 years down the road. How do you plan then? You can't really roll it in terms of calculation and spread it on what you have here. You'd have to do a standalone type of calculation administrative that would be set to the side.
Is that, so don't, each doesn't each generation resource have its own depreciation schedule?
Yes. Like,
so is this a lot different than that?
They do today, but this is outside of your depreciation schedule.
Right, but wouldn't it be similar? Each resource, like each wind farm with this, would have its own kind of production tax credits schedule that would follow?
That's how I would kind of see it.
Okay.
Each farm kind of has their own total revenue requirement calculation.
But there's more to it than just depreciation, right? There's levelizing all the costs associated with it, O&M, all of that, right? Not just depreciation.
Yep. Right, but this would be just the production tax credits would be kind of on its own.
Well, it depends, you know, which method you pick, right?
Not under Victor's.
But I guess I think we can do.
All I'm saying is that you can't really add them, throw them all in a pot as you move forward, right? You
correct.
Just
each one would be separate, right?
Yep.
And I was just relating it to how, like, you do have separate schedules for other things for each resource.
Systematically, like, you do systematically set that up in the negotiation system, right? But here, there's it's maybe not quite as straightforward as that, because from a book perspective, like Travis said, you have to recognize those taxes, right? So this is
sure.
like an additional accounting for this particular
mm-hmm. Okay.
Any
I don't think
questions?
I do have any other questions.
Commissioner Crisman?
I don't think so. I suppose I'll think of some later, but not immediately off the top of my head.
I'll stall for 5 minutes. Victor, Jack, anything else you want to add? No, since we're all together. And we
I don't think so. I think, like I said, I don't have one major preference of the three different options we've been talking about here. I think they can all be applied appropriately and fairly to both the customer and the company. My take on the whole thing has always been, you know, what is your goal? Is it to make this look like any other utility asset? Is it to levelize the cost of it over time? Or is it to continue doing how we've been doing these in the past? And your decision will guide you.
Yeah, I guess I have nothing to add to that as well.
Anything else from the company?
I guess one follow-up to Jack's question earlier. Sure. I mean, I think if the application is not approved as submitted, then, you know, there's a lot of complexity in how you describe the calculation, if you will. So we'd probably want to hopefully be able to review if that what that order would look like. If you're going to try and describe this levelizing concept, it's one thing to just kind of visualize it, but I think it's another thing to capture it in words in an order. So I think hopefully we'll be able to review that.
We'll be able to create some sort of memorandum of agreement of how that should be applied for the benefit of everyone once the commission gives some direction on that.
I think if you just say Shook Look with an R, you'd be set.
Done.
Everyone knows what that is.
I guess, yeah, I would be very concerned about what's the time frame, the specific time frame. We've made some broad assumptions here. Mm-hmm. I don't know that Diamond Willow is going to hang on for 40 years. You know, we've got to get this refined, and we'd need to know pretty much the rules of the road, I think.
Yeah.
So that if we're going to embark on this, we're projecting 20 years, or project whatever we're projecting. Mm-hmm. We have to decide what that is, so that, you know, down the road we all still know what those parameters were. If something flips on us, or I mean, again, we're going to be collecting cash, so that's easier than having to go back and ask for cash later on. But I just think there's so many variables here, and so many unknowns into the future. And I'm not trying to be like it has to be the way it always is, but I just think we need to write down what we all thought was going to happen, and make sure that we're in agreement at the end.
I think
that's what we were hoping here today was, you know, is this a direction you want to go? And if so, I think everybody would agree there's more work to be done.
Yes.
In getting to what rate would we put on the tariff sheet?
Yeah, no, I think that would be more than fair that you're given a reasonable amount of time should we
make
the decision to go down a certain path just so you can respond accordingly.
And that being said, though, so from early on, one of the reasons, as I understood it, why in just even your original proposal, we have the $2.8 million under-recovered balance. One of the reasons for that was that we didn't get it started last year in time. And so we don't want to drag a decision out too long either. I think we need to give clear direction to the company so you can be moving on this, because otherwise we'll be faced with maybe a potentially even bigger under-recovered balance along with the impact of this next year. So
certainly,
you know, kind of got to get moving, I guess, if we're going to make any changes.
Yep. That's fair. Completely agree.
All right. Anything else from anyone?
Well, should, to that end, should we talk about time frames at all for what the next steps are? What would we have to do? Whose court is the ball in to come up with the next step?
I think we would probably have to do a work session so we can get an idea from the three of you what we should work on. Honestly, even probably the standard method, we may have to have some rejiggering of things, because I think the expectation was this was rolling out January or February 1st, which...
February 1st,
which is probably not going to happen.
Just for clarification, the standard method is?
Standard method is business as usual.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
Well, let's get a work session scheduled so we can take the next step, because I think the answer is the ball's in our court.
So, yeah, to provide the direction. So we should, the week of the 21st, we should do a work session for this, and I'll get back on the Dakota Access issue, too.
We had did we schedule something for the 23rd of January?
Mm-hmm. I think we have a meeting. Oh, no. Oh, we might have. I can't remember.
Which day?
Yeah. Was that the
23rd of January?
23rd? No.
Or was that
21st we did. But just
I had asked that we avoid the 23rd, but if that's the earliest date, I really think we need to make a decision on this.
The only other date is the 13th for me.
And
24th is out.
I would.
This week is open.
I would come in on the 23rd too.
23rd or 4th.
24th.
He said the first date.
Yeah.
I have a fire.
Oh, Jerry.
We ran that balance up already last year by letting this run out too far, and now it looks like we might do it again this year, and the rates are already, it's going to be a pretty good increase already here. Does it make any sense to get this in place and then worry about the levelization procedure separately?
Jerry, you're saying put this the traditional standard. Okay, gotcha.
It seems like when I brought this up last year, we didn't want to do it until it was due, and then now that it's due, we go back to the normal method and address this later in the middle.
Yeah.
And so then when it comes up in the middle, we'll be, why don't we just wait till the end of the year again?
Right. I guess from my perspective, I would say I think we can do this reasonably quickly if the commission so chooses to do something different, where it does not need to delay us too much beyond the original planning date.
When you say quickly, how long is quickly? 2 months?
I was 30 days within a month, hopefully. So, like, let's say March 1 would be my goal of implementing.
Would you need the input from the other highly used in North Dakota as well, so it would be consistent, or whatever method you decide here you would apply it across?
I think the commission could apply it differently between them if they so chose, but it would likely be similar treatment between them. But we already have on the 22nd an informal coming up with NSP to talk about their renewable rider, where we're going to be talking about the same issue. Otter Tail just filed theirs very recently, so we haven't scheduled anything with them. I would want to present them similarly. We have informals and talk about them. I would like to be able to talk to them apples to apples.
Okay. Well,
besides the 23rd?
13th, here's an idea.
I could call in on one of those other dates.
I'm available 13th.
I think Brian might be gone.
Oh, I'll be gone.
I could potentially, we don't need to tie everybody up for this, though. I could potentially call in on one of those other dates, so I'll get back to you guys with that possibility of next week. 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th. Or not the 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th. I could call in. I'll be traveling. But
Steve, are you listening to your assignment?
I am not.
Okay, you are going to be herding cats, which would be three commissioners and helping coming up at the time. So we'll figure that out.
Okay.
Anything else so we can get you on your way, because I'm sure you have other things to do today. Okay, this works. Our informal hearing is, well, before I close it out, I just want to reiterate the handout as well as the audio recording of the proceeding is now considered evidence. Are there any objections to this evidence becoming a part of the official record upon which a decision will be made?
None from staff.
No objections.
Okay. And the evidence as presented is now part of the official record upon which a decision will be made. And I don't believe we have any other matters, so we are adjourned. Thank you very much.